You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Cost is the third in a trilogy of novels by Roxana Robinson, in which she's delved into the vulnerable and intricate interactions in the family and what she calls the American myth of entitlement. It's about how three generations of a family react to one of its members' drug addiction. And the book is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux and the Sarah Crichton imprint. I'm very pleased that it brings Roxana Robinson back to the show today. Hi.
Hi. I'm so glad to be here.
What about the matter of American ideals of entitlement and manifest destiny? Is this a conscious theme or something that just slips into the work?
I wasn't really aware of it until I finished this book. And then I looked back at the other two and realized what I'd been doing, that I'd been exploring this particular notion.
In This Is My Daughter, you explored the notion that if a marriage doesn't work out, we're entitled to a second one that does. Sweetwater took a look at the environment and the idea that we expect the land to continue to provide no matter how we treat it. So what myths of entitlement are you dealing with in this book?
This one started out with the notion of a certain moment in your life when your children are grown and your parents are fine, and you will suddenly enter into a place where you can live your own life sort of unfettered by family commitments. And that seemed to me a misapprehension.
Because it's just impossible. In this case, Julia Lambert, your protagonist, realizes that her mother is becoming increasingly forgetful. And then at a certain point, she discovers that one of her sons is in serious trouble.
Yeah, she realizes that she's being these bonds are still there and they're very powerful.
But hadn't you intended at first to simply make this a novel about the complications of being an adult child still dealing with connections to aging parents? When did drug addiction become a part of this story?
It's an odd process. You know, writing a novel is an odd process. And I did start out with this notion of how complicated it is to be a good adult child, and that you find yourself, regardless of the fact that you're an adult and your parents are adults, and you feel that you ought to be in a level playing field, but you continually find yourself being a bad child instead of a good adult. So that was my initial notion. But what happened was that in this sort of idyllic setting of the old farmhouse in Maine, where Julia is taking care of her parents who are there for a visit, her older son Stephen is on the way up to see his mother and grandparents, and he's thinking on the bus about a visit he just paid to his younger brother. And so we're in Stephen's mind remembering this visit, and that's the moment when I realize, when I'm inside Stephen's mind as he's thinking of this, that Jack is a heroin addict, and that changes the character of the entire book.
And Stephen wonders, how did you decide when you should take over someone's life? In a family in which another member says, this is a family that had never pulled together in its life.
Yeah, they're families which are used to making strong connections and working together all the time. And this is a family that's composed of members who are quite distant from each other. And they are wary of each other and critical of each other. So it's very hard for them to move into this sequence in a way that's going to be productive.
The question later becomes, what do you do when, having taken over someone's life, you realize that you failed in your efforts?
Yeah, taking over.
I don't want to give away all the details here, but
no,
these are big issues.
Yeah, and when you feel as a parent that it's a moment for you to step in and change something that your child is doing, if your child is an adult, you may realize that you don't have the control you thought you should. So then what?
So they lure Jack up from Brooklyn, the addicted son. And then it's decided, I'm not going to go into all the details, Wendell, her ex-husband, who's married to a therapist, says, well, we got to get him a drug counselor. And the family suddenly conspires to take over this troubled son's life. And who would question that desire?
Yeah, when you realize that heroin or drug addiction is present in your family, there are a lot of feelings that result. One of them is panic. One of them is denial. One of them is rage. And because there is no one particular known treatment that is always successful, people flail around and they struggle to find out what they think might be best for them.
So here you are, you're into your third chapter in this novel, and suddenly you discover that one of Julia's two sons, they're both in their early 20s, is addicted to heroin. Do you have to put everything on hold and then go out there and learn everything you can about heroin?
More or less, yes. I still went on writing because there are other things that happen in the book that are not directly related to that. But yes, I did take a deep breath and realize that I had to enter a world that I didn't know and learn everything that I needed to know about that world, which was going to be complicated and challenging and in some ways frightening.
So what does that mean? You wound up going to places where people are in rehab? Talking to drug addicts?
I went to places where people were talking about their addictions, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I talked to them. And I also talked to people who were treating them.
And one of the things that comes across very strongly is that this is a difficult drug to detox from.
Heroin is really, really a bad drug to be addicted to, partly because of its extraordinary rapturous high, so that there are two kinds of addiction. One is psychological and one is physical and chemical. And even if you've gotten rid of the chemical aspect of it, it remains in your mind forever. So it's really difficult to kick.
It just remains there as some kind of a Proustian Madeleine that is always luring you back.
It's always there, apparently. There's one theory that holds that there's something called a super memory, which is more powerful than any memory we know ordinarily. And so that's continually there, just sort of ticking like a time bomb in your mind.
In contrast, Julia's mother, Catherine, is beginning to lose her memory. She's developing early signs of Alzheimer's. And you get into all your characters' heads. So you had to get into the head of somebody who is suffering from early Alzheimer's.
Yeah, the book opens with Catherine struggling to remember something, and I found her as a character incredibly poignant because she's trying so hard to hold on to who she is and to conceal it the way we all want to conceal any kind of illness that we have or any kind of debility, and she's trying, and in that situation, there's really very little you can do.
And heroin addicts also try to present themselves as being normal.
Yeah, and their world becomes less and less normal, but they have less and less ability to remember what the normal world is like. So it's as though they're on two horses.
My guest is Roxana Robinson, whose latest novel is called Cost. It is published by Farrar, Straus and Giroux. Julia's father, Edward, is a former neurosurgeon. Why is that particularly fitting, considering his personality?
Well, surgeons, you know, like to be in control. They feel that they're very powerful, and they are. And particularly a neurosurgeon who's in charge of other people's consciousness, it's really an incredibly powerful position to be in. It's like a priest or a shaman to be in charge of someone else's mind.
Well, he had performed surgery on soldiers who'd suffered from combat fatigue during World War II. Is he able to offer much insight into the drug addiction problems that his grandson is suffering from?
Well, like many people, what he learned when he was a young man was what he thought was going to be kind of the ineluctable truth. So he believes his presence as a medical person supersedes anyone else's knowledge. And that makes him not very positive as a contributor, but he's a very powerful presence in the family, so that's one of the complications.
Toward the end of the novel, Julia's sister Harriet meditates on the nature of her relationship with all the different people involved, and she thinks these were the people to whom she was closest and most painfully distant, the people she most longed to have near, whose touch was unbearable to her. She could not bear to meet their eyes. Their presence was essential. What was the cost of these connections, the cost of severing them? Now, I'm not one of those people who asks how much of this is autobiographical, but how do you even come to that? Or do you think that those are thoughts that we perhaps all have on some level?
I think that we all have some kind of feeling like that towards our family, that I certainly believe that these are the people who are the closest to you. They're the people who can make you the angriest and the happiest in the world. There's no one who means more to you than your family. And yet there's something about that bond which is frightening and alarming and unsettling, disturbing, just because they have so much power. So there are families who are closer than others, but I think there are still these kind of electrical charges, even in the closest families, this feeling of alarm.
You switch narrators throughout the book at times. In fact, you change the perspective rather abruptly from one sentence to the next. Did you want to be able to enter anyone's head at any time?
I wasn't really aware of this while I was doing it, but as it evolved, I realized I was doing six voices, two members of each generation. So the book moves between the perspectives of Edward and Catherine, who are Julia's parents, Julia and her sister Harriet, and the two boys, Julia's sons.
Only Wendell doesn't give us his thoughts.
Wendell doesn't give us his thoughts for two reasons. One, he's not a blood member of the family. And two, I just didn't have the energy. I just couldn't go there.
Well, this must have been technically challenging to shift from inside the different characters' heads, sometimes pretty much on a dime.
Yeah, I wanted that extra capability when you're in a scene that contains a lot of people to realize how this is affecting everybody. So we go from the 88-year-old neurosurgeon's mind to the 22-year-old heroin junkie's mind. And I want you to be able to see how this affects everyone.
By the way, we're not only talking about heroin and Alzheimer's and family relations, but you also deal with other things like art because of your own background in art?
Well, I realized also with this book that I use art a lot in my books. My first novel, Summerlight, is about a photographer. This Is My Daughter is about a woman who's an art historian. Sweetwater is not, but it's a world that I know very well, and so it's very useful for me to move into it and use it as a place for my characters.
And not just to make a point. Sometimes you throw in some private musings that aren't directly relatable to the plot.
Yeah, Julia, it also was important. Julia's a painter. She's an artist, and she teaches at Columbia. And it was important for her to have her own real life apart from her family. So there's one scene that takes place in a gallery in Chelsea at her opening, and she's thinking about what it means to be an artist, to be a woman artist, to be an oil painter, and what the history of art means to her. So that's her other life.
Although, in this case, the book is set in an idyllic part of Maine, dealing with some very unidyllic issues, Alzheimer's and heroin addiction.
Yeah, but I think everyone's life contains lots of very various parts like this.
Since you deal with aging and all of the other themes that we've been talking about, are you at all concerned that some of the reviews have simply described this as being about heroin addiction?
I sort of thought that would happen. And I think people are unsettled by the notion of heroin. And so that seems like the sort of the hottest button. And if people are drawn to it. And I've gotten responses from people through my website and people who come up to me at readings, people that don't seem to be a part of the world of heroin, and they come up and say, this is my story. How did you know about it?
Why did you call the book Cost?
The titles of my books come at the very end when they're finished. And I just wanted a title that would let the reader know that this is going to be challenging, that it's about consequences. And so that's why I chose it.
And Cost is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. I want to thank you so much for being with us. Roxana Robinson's latest novel, the last of a trilogy. So no more entitlement?
I don't know. We'll see what comes next.
And maybe it will be, what is it, a tetralogy?
Oh, yeah. Quartet? I don't know.
Who knows how far you could take this? An octet? Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thanks so much for having me. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.